Hello and welcome to the Beach House 34 podcast. I'm your host, Christine Worth. A warm, warm welcome to all the new subscribers. Thank you so much for subscribing. And a huge thank you to all of our loyal listeners. Before we get started, I want you to know this is a continuing series on the trial readings for the Darlie Routier case. Now, her case, she is a mother who in 1996 was accused and convicted of murdering her two children in Rowlett, Texas. And she currently sits on death row. If you're interested in hearing the entire true crime episode about her case, you can find that in episode number 33. And I will have a link for you below in the show notes. As soon as these trial readings are done, I'll be back to doing weekly true crime and paranormal cases. Now, in the last episode, who did we hear from? Well, we heard from Judith Floyd in episode 95. That was her final testimony, at least up to this point. And Judith is a, or was a, forensic lab supervisor at GeneScreen in Dallas. And essentially what we learned from her is that she went through the whole process about how she goes about finding DNA and how she tests it, and then talks about all of these samples that were linked to the crime scene at the Routier home. She talks about what she discovered on Darlie's t-shirt, on a comforter, the sock that was left in the alleyway, the Reebok tennis shoes, and a knife. And there were a few things that kind of popped up that I wasn't familiar with and I'd never heard about. For instance, we find out from Judith that there was an unidentified facial hair at the scene. It couldn't be tied to anyone in the home. She further says that there was a pubic hair found at the home, but again, this one had no result when tested. And probably one of the more interesting things was that on the knife itself that they considered the weapon that caused the crime, there were four stains total on this knife. Two of them matched Darlie, one matched Damon, and the fourth stain was actually a combination of both Darlie and Damon. But there wasn't any Devin DNA on this knife. So anyway, those are just a few things that came up in Judith's testimony. You can listen to her testimony. There's actually two episodes, 93 and 95. 93 is just kind of a, let's get all of our records together because items were numbered differently from the state's exhibits to what Judith had labeled them as within the lab over at GeneScreen. But episode 95 actually has all of the detailed information about the DNA that she located. And in this episode, we're going to hear from Carolyn Van Winkle, who was a forensic DNA analyst at Swift's. And her direct examination is begun by Mr. Greg Davis. And he begins by saying, "Miss Van Winkle, would you please tell us how you are employed?" "I am employed at the Institute of Forensic Sciences in Dallas as a forensic DNA analyst." "Okay. How long have you been with Swift's?" "Since January of 1986. "All right. How long have you been a DNA analyst?" "We began doing DNA analysis at the laboratory in 1991. "All right. And before you began doing DNA, what were you doing at Swift's?" "I was a forensic serologist, dealing mostly with blood and body fluids in criminal cases at that time." "All right. Would you give us a little bit more detail of your educational and professional background, please?" "I have a Bachelor of Science degree. I am a medical technologist registered by the American Society of Clinical Pathologists. I'm also a registered specialist in blood bank technology with the American Association of Blood Banks. I began my training doing DNA analysis at the FBI Academy. I have had other training at CellMark, one of the first laboratories in this country to do DNA analytical methods. I was also a visiting scientist working on standards using nationwide for forensic DNA analytical methods at the National Institute of Standards and Technology in Gaithersburg, Maryland. I have had numerous graduate coursework in molecular biology, biochemistry, advanced genetics, biostatistics, and numerous other meetings and seminars and so forth. All right, what are your present duties at SWIFS? Presently, we do all of the DNA analysis requested through the crime laboratory. These are criminal cases, whether they are rapes, assaults, homicides, body identifications, paternity, all criminal cases. Okay, how many years have you been doing the DNA analysis? Since 1991. At SWIFS, how many people actually work within the DNA section? We have two that do the DNA analytical methods full-time for court. We also have a technician that works for us. In an average year out there at SWIFS, how many cases are referred to you for DNA analysis? We have between 100 and 200 a year. And you personally, how many cases have you actually handled where you did the DNA analysis? Over 200. All right. And have you testified previously in cases involving DNA? I have. Approximately how many times have you testified in cases involving DNA? Many times. I would say 40, 50, in that amount. Okay. When a case comes to you, is it often a situation where you are going to have more than one sample involved in that particular case that you need to do DNA analysis on? Yes, that's correct. You need a sample to compare whatever evidence you are looking at to. Okay. In this particular case, were several items submitted to you for DNA analysis? Yes, that's correct. And did you collect some items yourself for DNA analysis in this case? Some were collected from the evidence by me, yes. Did you receive other items from the medical examiner's office? I did. Did you receive some items from the Rowlett Police Department? I did. Did you receive other items from Charles Lynch? I don't believe any of the analytical tests I did on this case. How about Catherine Long? I did. What kinds of DNA tests does SWIFS presently do? We do two types of methods on forensic cases, that being PCR or polymerase chain reaction and RFLP or restriction fragment length polymorphism. Okay. In your PCR testing that you presently do, do you do DQ alpha? That is one of the systems we do, yes. Are you presently beginning to get ready to do D1S80 testing out there at SWIFS also? Yes, we have been in the process of validating that for a while, okay? And up to this date, though, you are not quite ready to begin the actual D1S80 testing out there, is that right? We have not done it on casework, that's correct. Okay. When these samples came into you originally, Ms. Van Winkle, what sort of testing did you perform on them, the RFLP or the DQ alpha? Initially, since there was quite a volume of samples that were requiring testing, DQ alpha was performed. And the reason that was tested was because the three individuals whose blood would have been present were different DQ alpha types. It was rapid and it was a way to screen the evidence initially. Okay. Does RFLP testing take longer than DQ alpha? It does. So initially you did DQ alpha. Did you later go back with the samples and do RFLP testing also? Yes, on many of the samples I did. Okay. What was the purpose of going back with the RFLP? The RFLP testing is actually more discriminating. The set of loci that we look at is extremely discriminating, greater than 99.9% of the individuals. It is the most discriminating test. So in order to rule out the possibility of any other banding pattern or any other possible contributor of the blood that was done. Okay. In this case, do you know approximately how many DNA analyses that you have actually performed on the samples given to you? I do. In this particular case, it was over 100 analyses done, okay? And how does that compare with the average case that comes out there to you from the DA's office? Well, considerably more. The majority of our cases are sexual assault cases, In a typical sexual assault case, we will have three samples, one from the victim, one from the accused, and one from the evidence. When a sample comes to you for testing, can you walk us through what happens to that sample? Let's say I'm a police officer, and I bring a sample out there to you, and I say, I want that tested for DNA. What would you do with that sample? Initially, the officer will hand deliver that as a rule. It would be given a specific number based on that victim and that offense. That is a number called our FL number, and that number stays with the case throughout the case. Each item of evidence is then given another number. Usually, it's an accession number, one through however many pieces of evidence there are. So let's say I bring five different items out there. They are all different items. Would you then, let's say I've got five different socks, for instance, and I say, I want these tested. Would you then number the socks one through five? That would be a common way of doing it, yes. Unless, for instance, they were packaged in one bag, and then they may be numbered a little differently. Okay, so if it came out there, you have got one through five. And then let's say that you, off of that, let's say I am a serologist and I have already taken two samples that I want you testing off of each one of those socks. Would you then list that as T-1 and T-2 off each sock? Yes. For instance, that would be one T-1 and T-2, two T-1 and T-2, and so forth. Okay. After you have already numbered these samples that I give you, what is the next thing that you would do with them? Then, once these samples are taken or identified on the item of evidence, they are cut out and then they are packaged separately. They are wrapped in something similar to a wax paper and then packaged in a manila envelope and stored frozen. How do you prevent cross-contamination between samples? Each utensil that is used in the cutting out procedure is cleaned or is used. For instance, sometimes we may use a sterile blade that is used once and discarded. Again, that would depend on the sample. The sample is then wrapped separately, placed in the manila envelope, and of course, the whole time, the sample would be dried. Okay, how long does it take to run the DQ alpha test and actually get a result back? If we are doing just that, we can complete that testing in a couple of days. How about for RFLP? How long does it take to run that test? To do the routine amount of that we look at, which is for normally that is anywhere from 4 to 8 weeks. All right, so 2 days for DQ alpha, about 4 to 8 weeks for RFLP, right? That's correct. And when you are looking at the results for DQ alpha, what do you actually look at to determine whether or not you have got a match or not? That type of testing used is what's called a reverse dot blot. And basically, all you are doing is looking at a color change on the dots being representative of the alleles that you are looking at. So you are just comparing the dots and what lights up. It's called lights up. It's just a color change. Okay. And so you have got a known where these alleles have lighted up, correct? Yes. When you are looking at the unknown from the alleles that have lighted up, do you expect those then to correspond in position? Yes, that's correct. How about RFLP? How do you read the results there? On RFLP, what you are looking at is similar to an X-ray film, where you have a series of barcode-looking lanes. Those are our ladders, our standards that we put on those gels, and we compare the banding pattern that's between those barcode-looking lanes. We compare it first visually, and then we do a computer imaging or sizing and actually size it and compare it. In this case, Ms. Van Winkle, did you receive blood samples identified as coming from the defendant, Darley Routier, Darren Routier, Damon Routier, and Devin Routier? Yes. From the medical examiner, I received Damon and Devin and drew the blood samples on Darley and Darren. Okay. So the defendant's blood and that of Darren Routier were actually drawn there at Swift's. Is that right? They were. Did you also receive several blood samples identified as having come from the defendant's t-shirt? Yes. Did you also receive several blood samples identified as having come from inside 5801 Eagle Drive? Yes. And did you also receive several blood samples from other individual items identified as having come from 5801 Eagle Drive? Yes. Let me go through some of the individual items first with you, and I'm going to use your Swift's number. Would that be the best way to identify it for you? That would be easiest. Yes. All right. Did you receive a window screen, which will be Swift's item number 1? Yes, I did. All right. And on that window screen, did you attempt to perform DNA analysis? Yes. What was the result? Stains are stains that reacted presumptively with our reagent were taken off the screen, and they were actually performed a DNA extraction on. In other words, DNA that would have been there was extracted. There was no human DNA detectable at all. Okay. Which means what to you as a DNA analyst? There was no human blood present. No human blood. That is the window screen item number 1. That's correct. Okay. Let's talk about the window, which will be Swift's item number 47. What were the results there? On that item, I also took off or taken off was approximately 5 stains. Those again were done a DNA extraction on, and there was no human DNA present. Okay. Well, if you take, for instance, insect blood, will human DNA extract out of insect blood? It will not. Let me ask you about a green and plaid washcloth, item number 29. Yes. Okay. What were the DNA results there? The DNA types that were obtained from the washcloth were consistent with Darley. With Darley Routier? Routier, yes. Okay. Now, let me ask you about a white dish towel. This will be Swift's item number 30. What were your results? The types were consistent with Darley Routier. Darley Routier. I want to talk about 2 green and white plaid dish towels. These will be Swift's item number 28. Were you able to get a result from items 28? I was not. Let me ask you now about a multicolored comforter. This is Swift's item number 18. What were your results? The type on that comforter was consistent with Devon Routier. Now, let me ask you about a green blanket, Swift's item number 21. The DNA from that item was consistent with Damon Routier. The green blanket, Damon Routier? Yes. Now, the blue blanket, which is item number 26, the blue blanket with stains consistent with Darley Routier. All right. Now, I would like to ask you about blue jeans, which were identified as Damon Routier's blue jeans, item number 25. What were the results? Stains from the right leg, back, and front were consistent with Darley Routier and Damon Routier. Okay. Did you then have 2 mixtures, actually? That's correct. Where both individuals' blood is present in the mixture. Is that correct? That's correct. How many samples did you have on the jeans? The one that had these results was 1 from the front and 1 from the back of the right leg. The back and front right leg? That's correct. How about item number 13? That is Damon Routier's t-shirt? From that item, the stain was consistent with Damon Routier and Darley Routier. Okay. Again, a mixture? That's correct. Number 68, a black baseball cap with Planet Hollywood logo on the front? Stains consistent with Darley Routier. A vacuum cleaner, item number 69? Several stains consistent with Darley Routier. Do you recall how many stains? 4 were tested. Okay, 4. All Darley Routier? Correct. Okay. A rug, item number 70. What were your results? 7 stains were tested, all Darley Routier. Now on item number 3, I'll refer to these as Devon Routier's shorts. A stain consistent with Devon Routier. two items, which I am going to refer to as Devon Routier Pillow and Pillow Case, the Power Ranger Pillow and Pillow Case. What were your results? On the pillow, staying consistent with Darlie Routier. Okay, the pillow Darlie Routier? That's correct. How about the pillow case? Oh, one stain was consistent with Devon Routier, the other one, Darlie. Okay, that's going to be Swift's number three also. Is that correct? Three also. Okay. So we had pillow and pillowcase still with Swift's number three. The pillow is Darlie Routier. The pillowcase is Devon Routier on one and Darlie Routier on the other, right? And Darlie and Devon on the other one. Yes, that's correct. Okay, so Darlie and Devon. So one is pure Devon and one a mixture? Correct. Okay, a black and white blanket. This is, again, item number three, referred to as Devon blanket. What was the result there? Two stains consistent with Devon Routier. How about an item number two, a knife? The stains on the handle of the knife from was consistent by DQ Alpha only with Darlie and one of the boys. Okay. Was that the handle? Yes. Okay. And what are the blood types? It was a DQ Alpha type, and that particular type was the type consistent with Darlie Routier and one of the boys' types. Okay. Was that a mixture? It was. Okay. So it's Darlie. And can you tell from that DQ Alpha testing which of the two boys was the contributor on that mixture? From that particular stain, no. On items 63 through 65, yes. Okay. Where did items 63 through 65 come from? They were submitted from JP Howell. Okay. Did they also originate from the knife, item number two? They did. Okay, did they originate from another part of the knife then? Three different areas of the knife, yes. Okay, what areas did they come from? 63 originated from the blade tip. Okay, let's start with number 63. What was your result there? Consistent with Damon and Darlie. Damon and Darlie on the tip. Where did 64 come from? 64 was lower on the blade toward the handle. Okay, what was your result there? Darlie Routier. And where did number 65 come from? It was another area on the handle, RFLP pattern consistent with Darlie Routier. 65 from the handle? That's correct. That's Darlie Routier? That's correct. Did you receive an item number 27, a sock? Yes. Okay, what were your results there? One stain from the sock consistent with Damon and Devon Routier. Additional stain from the sock with Devon Routier only. So one mixture of Damon and Devon, and then one pure Devon, is that right? And that's correct. Ms. Van Winkle, let me show you State's Exhibit number 122. Do you recognize this diagram? I do. Have you had a chance to look at it prior to your testimony today? I have. Have I asked you to go through the blood samples shown on this board and initial the samples that you have tested? Yes. Have I also asked you to look at the results reported out on this board to determine whether or not they are accurate or not? You have. Okay. Have you initialed the samples that you tested? And have you also verified that the results shown here on the board are in fact correct and they correspond with your findings after your testing? Yes. Ms. Van Winkle, also, have I had you look at State's Exhibits 120 and 121 prior to your testimony today? Yes. Have I asked you also, with regards to this, to initial the samples that you tested from the t-shirt, front, both front and back? Yes, that's correct. Have you done that? I have. Have you also verified that the result shown here on the board, in fact, is correct? And it corresponds with the findings of your DNA analysis? Yes. At this point, Mr. Greg Davis says, Your Honor, at this time, we will offer State's Exhibit 120, 121, 120A, 120B, 120C, 121A, and State's Exhibit 122. Court says, Any objection? And Mr. Hagler of the defense team says, Yes, Your Honor. May we approach the bench? The court says, You may. And at this point, a discussion is held. It is off the record, so this is not included within the trial transcripts. And then finally, the judge says, for record purposes, why don't we just take them one at a time so we keep the record clear? Mr. Davis says, okay, yes, sir. And the court says, all right. Mr. Hagler says, okay, Your Honor. And then the court says, just for the record, you are now viewing state's exhibits what? Mr. Hagler says, yes, Your Honor, we're viewing state's exhibit numbers 121A and 121. And again, we would re-urge our objection. The state has failed to establish a proper chain of custody as to the t-shirt from which these various blood samples were obtained. They haven't. There is a break in the link. In fact, they have not brought all of the links in the chain. And specifically, they have not brought paramedic Zimmerman, who handled this shirt, apparently put it into a bag. Our argument, Your Honor, and objection, is that the shirt has been contaminated and there has been no showing made to the jury of the condition that the shirt was in, how it was folded, how the stains were positioned on the shirt prior to the time as received by Mr. Zimmerman and at the time that they were subsequently received by the crime lab. Furthermore, Your Honor, there is no indication as to how the particular shirt was packaged or whether or not there were other items in the package at the time. There has been testimony before the court that there were other clothing by other victims. We would submit that there has been a showing of contamination of this particular exhibit, which is State's Exhibit number 25, from which the state subsequently obtained various samples which were subsequently submitted to DNA testing. So, based on those reasons, plus the other reasons that we objected to the admission into evidence of the samples themselves, namely all of the samples obtained from State's Exhibit 25, we would object to the admission into evidence of this particular exhibit. The court says, all right. And for the record, you are objecting on the grounds stated to State's Exhibit number 120, 120A, 120B, and 120C, and State's Exhibits 121 and 121A. Is that correct? Yes, sir. All of the photographs on that one board. The court then says, all right, overruled. State's Exhibit 120, 120A, B, and C, and State's Exhibit 121 and 121A are admitted. Let's get... And then Mr. Hagler says, in addition, Your Honor, we would submit that due to the contamination of that exhibit and that the confusing and prejudicial effect vastly outweighs any probative value that the exhibit may have. The court then says, overruled. Can we see that? Let's go on. State's Exhibit number 121, 122, rather. Mr. Greg Davis says, yes, sir, 122. The court says, 122. Now, this is the next one, right? Mr. Hagler, again of the defense team, says, again, Your Honor, we would simply re-urge all those objections that we voiced to the admission of evidence obtained from State's Exhibit number 25 and submit that they have not shown a proper chain of custody under Rule 901A. The court says, all right, overruled. State's Exhibit 122 is admitted. Mr. Hagler then says, finally, Your Honor, again, as to the last exhibit, that objection included all of the objections that we have voiced in relation to evidence of the exhibits arising out of State's Exhibit number 25. The court says, fine, that will be noted in the record. Mr. Hagler then says, furthermore, we would object, Your Honor, in addition to the exhibits, we would also object to any testimony this witness may have as to the results of the testing of these exhibits and also all of the exhibits obtained by State's Exhibit number 25. The court says, fine, overruled. Mr. Hagler then says, can we have a continuing objection, Your Honor? The court then says, continuing objection, you have it. Anything else? Mr. Hagler then says, no, Your Honor. The court says, thank you. All right. Mr. Hagler says, thank you. The court says, let's move right along. Mr. Greg Davis says, yes, sir. And then Mr. Greg Davis continues his questioning. Ms. Van Winkle, as we look at State's Exhibit 122, the names down here at the bottom, do they reflect? We have just color-coded the blood results, have we not? Yes, that is correct. So would it be fair to say that the DNA result coming back to Damon would be a red and Darley would be a green and to Devin would be a yellow? Yes, that's correct. So that whatever we see green on this board, does that reflect a DNA result that it came back as a match to Darlie Routier? That's correct. Where we see a yellow, would that be a DNA match back to Devin Routier? That's correct. Finally, a red result would be a match DNA-wise with Demon Routier. Is that correct? Yes, that's correct. If we come through here, beginning in the utility room, for instance, we see three stains, correct? That's correct. One on the floor and two on the ball cap here, just for example. These came back to who? To Darlie Routier. Now, did you also test here in the sink area? Yes. And your results there would be shown here. Is that right? That's correct. Let me ask you about the two in particular, where we have half of it is green, and then we have quarters of yellow and red. What do those particular results reflect there? There were two particular stains, one of which was on the handle of that sink, and one of which was in the bottom of the sink, both fairly faint stains. The primary type was Darlie's type. There was a faint type 3, which could have been contributed by either Damon or Devin. The samples listed as 70 here on this rug, those are who? Those are Darlie. The item 69 here with the vacuum cleaner, those are whose? Those are Darlie's. On the kitchen floor here, with the RM and RH designation, those are who? Those are Darlie. Again, along the wall here in the kitchen near the light switch, yes, those are Darlie. This up here on the kitchen bar area, Darlie. And then a designation for the green and white plaid rug there, item number 29, Darlie. Along the wall here in the hallway, as well as the family room, Darlie. Where we have represented Damon Routier here on the carpeted area, that is correct. That would be Damon. Is that right? That's correct. Okay. Then we have on his t-shirt and on his blue jeans, we have half green and half red. Do those reflect the mixtures that you testified about? They do. On the couch here, items 52, 53, and 54, Darlie. The two samples here on the cutout carpet behind this couch, Darlie. The two samples here on the carpet by the chair, Darlie. Again, on the carpet near the chair 105s, I don't believe I tested those, but those reflect Darlie also. Reflect Darlie. Okay. Now, in the area where we have represented Devin Routier, the shorts were his, correct? That's correct. And you had two off the black and white blanket come back to him. Is that right? That's correct. On the pillowcase here, and on the pillow and pillowcase, we had one Darlie, one Devin, and then one mixture. Is that right? That's correct. The carpet area by Devin, Darlie. And then finally, in this area between the two couches on the green blanket, we had Damon Routier. That's correct. On the blue blanket, we had Darlie. Coming from this couch in this position, we had a mixture. Is that right? That's correct. Of Damon and Darlie Routier. Is that right? That's correct. Over here on the arm of this couch near the windows, we had a Damon. Is that right? Damon, correct. And finally, on the handprint that came out of the carpet, that was Damon. Is that right? The print itself was Damon. That's correct. And the green dot indicated right here next to that handprint, what does that represent? Adjacent to the area of the handprint was a soaked through stain of Darlie. So we have Damon's blood in this portion of the den by the couch. And we also find his blood on this portion where his body was. Is that right? That's correct. Now, Ms. Van Winkle, looking at the t-shirt, again, we have used the same color coding. Is that right? Yes. Where Damon Routier will be represented in red? Yes. Darlie Routier will be represented in green? Yes. And finally, Devin Routier will be represented in yellow. Is that right? Yes. Ms. Van Winkle, For the samples that you tested where you actually got a result that you could report out, did you find any unidentified samples other than the three individuals? No. So if you tested and you got a result, they either came back to Damon, Darley, or Devin Routier. Is that right? That's correct. Mr. Greg Davis then says, I'll pass the witness. And the court says, Mr. Mulder, all right, thank you. And then the cross-examination is done by Mr. Douglas Mulder. Ms. Van Winkle, did you do any DNA testing with respect to the pubic hair that was recovered out there at the Routier residence? No, I did not. That was sent over to GeneScreen. Is that right? I don't have any direct knowledge of that. No. Have you reviewed GeneScreen's findings? No, I have not. Who would know about that evidence? Whatever went to GeneScreen came through y'all, didn't it? Through the laboratory, not through me. Yes, ma'am. But either, as I recall what Ms. Floyd testified to, she said she either got the evidence from Ms. Van Winkle. That would be you? That's correct. Or Ms. Floyd would be your partner. I mean, that was Ms. Floyd or Mr. Lynch. Normally, he does the trace analysis, the hair type evidence. I deal with the blood and the body fluid evidence. Okay, so you don't have any idea why pubic hair was not given to you first, I guess, and was sent over to GeneScreen? I don't have any direct knowledge of that, no. But that is Mr. Lynch's area of expertise, is it not? As far as which part of it, as far as microscopically identifying it? Yes, hair analysis. That part of the hair analysis, yes. Okay. Now, as I understand your testimony, you are telling this jury that you did your various analysis on the knife, butcher knife. You only had one knife, didn't you? That had blood on it, yes. Yes, ma'am. And you are telling this jury that you did your analysis on that knife, on the tip of the knife, several places on the blade of the knife, and on the handle of the knife. Is that right? Yes. Okay. And are you telling the jury that you have no evidence that Devin's blood was ever on that knife? Is that fair to say? That's correct. Okay. No question about that, is there? From the samples I tested? Yes, ma'am. Which were limited and was not all of the blood on the knife. Well, there was no evidence of Devin's blood. Okay. Well, you had access to all of these exhibits and were able to take samples from wherever you desired, were you not? Are you referring to the knife? No, I'm referring to all of the exhibits. Basically, yes, that would be a fair statement. Okay. And for example, do your records reflect how many dish towels, washcloths, dish rags, whatever you want to call them, came into your laboratory? They do, perhaps, but I have not sat down and counted them. Would you do that, please? The court then says, Mr. Mulder, I think Miss Van Winkle. And then Mr. Mulder says, Miss Van Winkle, how many towels do you find? Towels and rags, approximately 21, if I counted correctly. Approximately 21? Yes. How many of those were tested by you? By myself, as far as DNA analysis? Yes. Only the ones we spoke of earlier. All right. Now, I believe you said you did some green plaid towels. That's correct. Would these be the plaid towels? They would be item number 28. Okay. And these tests you have are very sensitive, aren't they? Yes. Okay. As a matter of fact, I think it's been said here in court that you could actually analyze the court then again says, would you mind standing, please, Mr. Mulder? And Mr. Mulder says, I don't mind a bit, Judge. I have got to bend over to pick this stuff up unless you would like to have somebody. The court then says, all right. Mr. Mulder then says, what's your pleasure? I want to make you happy. The court says, well, I would rather have you stand, if you would. I mean, there are several people who can pick it up for you. Mr. Mulder then says, all right, I don't mind if one of y'all will get this for me. But don't bend down when you get it. The court then says, the sidebar comments are unnecessary. Mr. Mulder says, all right. The court says, so please stand. Mr. Mulder says, all right. The court says, thank you. And Mr. Mulder again continues his questioning. You made the selection as to where to make this analysis. Actually, the serologist cut those stains out, Catherine Long. Catherine Long did? That's correct. You testified, are you saying there isn't any blood on these towels? No, I am not. Okay, it appears to have blood on them, doesn't it? Yes, it does have blood on them. Okay, on the towels, yes. But your analysis was inconclusive? There was no amplification product or banding pattern obtained from the stains on those towels. Did you go back to check on other portions of the towels? Another stain from the towel itself, each of those towels was not taken. No. Okay, I mean, why was that? Well, it just wasn't repeated, that testing. Okay, so you are telling the jury that there is blood on these towels? Yes, that's correct. You just don't know whose blood? That's correct. Okay. Now, likewise, as I understood your report on direct examination, you said that you found Darley's blood in the sink, and you found, also in the sink, blood consistent with the boy's blood. On two areas of the sink, there was primarily her DQ alpha type consistent with Darley and a very faint additional type. Okay. And you are telling the jury that you can't tell which of the boy's blood was in the sink? That's correct. That faint additional type could have originated from either. All right. It could have been either. It could have been both. It could have been either one. Is that right? That's correct. And you can't tell from your testing? That's correct. And didn't do any further tests? That's correct. Okay. Do you know if they tested, if you received any samples from the counter where the blood was located and the knife was recovered? Not to my knowledge, no. That appears to be blood there, doesn't it? On the counter? Yes. Okay, but that was not tested. Is that what you are telling us? To my knowledge, I did not test that. No. Okay. And these particular places in the carpet where blood was detected by you and analyzed by you and determined to be Darley's or one of the boys or whatever, you are not saying that there was another person's blood in that same vicinity, are you? If I understand you correctly, did you test this particular sample? It's identified as State's Exhibit Number 35E. I can't tell where that is from. Just looking at that, I have no idea where that stain is from. Does it appear that a sample has been taken from that? I can't tell by looking at that. Okay, it has not been cut out, at least, has it? I can't tell by looking at that. It could have been. Okay, so when we have these references here, this is rather broad, is it not? Well, what do you mean by that? Well, I mean that this, for example, is the area in which Devin Routier's body was recovered. Is that your understanding, or do you even know? Yes, that is my understanding. Okay. And you found his blood there naturally. Is that correct? Yes. Okay. And was that analyzed from the carpet? It was analyzed from the stains that we covered a moment ago. Okay. As far as the specific stains that were tested. Okay. Would you refresh my memory then? Okay. Were those carpet Devin in particular? Devin, uh-huh. No. Those were not carpet stains? Those were not carpet. Where were those stains taken from? There were stains taken from a pillow, a pillowcase, a blanket. Okay. And shorts. All right. And you found his blood on the pillow, right? No. The stain that was tested was consistent with Darley. All right. You found his blood on the pillowcase? Yes. Was her blood also on the pillowcase? Yes. Okay. So what you are telling us is your understanding that his body remained there until it was removed by the medical examiner's people. Is that not your understanding? Do you know anything about that? I don't know who removed the body. Okay. If Darley Routier had been injured, if her throat had been cut, and she had been stabbed in the right arm and was in attendance to this youngster after she had been injured, you would expect to find her blood in about his location, would you not? It's possible, sure. But if it's not possible, but if it's likely that you would find her blood there if she had been injured, is that not correct? It's possible. Yes. Okay. When you say it's, you know, I noticed when you answered Mr. Davis's questions, you would answer that it was consistent. So let me ask you that. Is that consistent with her being in attendance to him after she had been injured herself? If she was actively bleeding at that time and the blood was dripping, then that is consistent. Yes. Okay. And you are telling us that you did not analyze the carpet by him. Is that correct? No. That is correct? That's correct. Thank you. Did you do an analysis along this area? What numbers are those, if you could refresh my memory? Okay. Numbers TB5 of 6. Oh, I can. Maybe you can know better. TB5 of 6, 5 of 5. Those stains I did not analyze personally. No. Do you know where those stains were? Whether they were on the carpet or on the wall? No, I do not. Again, you would expect to find Darlie Routier's blood in conjunction with her son's blood if she had rendered him aid after she herself had been injured. Would you not? Again, that would be consistent. If blood was actively dripping from the wound, that would be consistent. Okay. Now, how many of the white towels did you analyze? Of the white ones? Uh-huh. I don't know right off. As far as for DNA analysis, I believe it was only our item number 30. Just one white towel for DNA analysis that I did. Yes. Okay. And you received some, and at this point, some items were marked for identification purposes only and given then to the court. And then Mr. Mulder at this point says, Judge, some of these are already in evidence, but in the interest of speed, rather than trying to find these, I will just offer these. I will offer into evidence what's been marked for identification and record purposes as defendants' exhibits 47, 48, 49, and 50. Mr. Greg Davis says no objection, and the court then says that these exhibits are admitted. Mr. Mulder then continues with his questioning. You will notice that, Ms. Van Winkle, in defendant's exhibit number 48, defendant's exhibit number 49, and defendant's exhibit number 47, there are three white towels. Do you see those? Yes, sir. Okay. Do you know which one you analyzed? No. Okay. Right off, I do not. Okay. Is there some reason that you didn't analyze? I know you did 100 analyses, and I realize you have got to draw the line someplace, right? But any reason that you didn't analyze the other towels? It wasn't specifically requested, and it wasn't initially analyzed. Okay. Who makes that determination as to what is to be analyzed and what is not to be analyzed? It's usually a joint effort based on experience and different requests between you and the district attorney's office or the investigators or the medical examiners. So you, working in conjunction with the police agencies, decide what is to be analyzed and what isn't to be analyzed, basically. Is that it? Well, that is always part of the decision-making process, yes. Could I see a copy of your notes, the report that you generated? The whole file? Yes. This is just a copy of that. I don't know what I'm going to do with the whole file. This is just a copy of the report that you have. Let me just see the whole file. All right. I think we have this. Let me look at it. Yeah, let me make sure we have it. Okay. If we get to a point where you can't answer and you need your notes, just let me know and I will get them for you. As I recall, you said the blue blanket was analyzed and on the blue blanket you found Darlie's blood. Is that right? I would like my notes to refer to, please. All right. Can you do it with this? Sure. Okay. Yes, that's correct. Okay. And the white towel that you analyzed, what number was that? It was item number 30. Okay. That would appear to be a very bloody item. This is 30, is it not? That's correct. Okay. And more consistent, perhaps, with the exhibit. It's not consistent with what is portrayed in defendant's exhibit number 49, is it? Well, perhaps if I could, well, let me look at my file here and see if it has any clue about where it was from. Okay. At this point, the court takes a short 10-minute break, tells Mr. Mulder to please get everything out, or the witness, to please get everything out that you would need to cross-examine this witness. And then once everybody's back in the courtroom and the proceedings are resumed on the record, it continues. And Mr. Mulder says, Judge, I don't know who the witnesses are, so I can't prepare in advance. The court says, I said this witness. Mr. Mulder says, I understand. Well, if I knew who the witnesses were, the court says, all right, well, you know that. And then Mr. Mulder says, well, we will offer into evidence what has been marked for identification and record purposes as defendants' exhibits 50, 51, and 52. Mr. Greg Davis says, no objection. The court says defendants' exhibits are admitted. And then Mr. Mulder continues his questioning. Did you analyze these Reebok shoes? No, I did not. Okay. If there was blood on them, you don't know where it was, obviously. I have no knowledge. No. Would you expect, or would it be consistent, if someone went to that light switch, and those are the shoes that we have here, would it be consistent, if they were bleeding, that blood might get on those shoes given their relative position to the light switch? Well, bleeding, they would have to be dripping blood. Do you see? Quite a bit. Any evidence in defendant's exhibit number 52 of blood being dripped? It's hard to say looking at the photographs. On testing, perhaps that is blood. Okay. You see some red. Looks like a red liquid there in the vicinity of the shoes. Do you not? Can you see it on the carpet? Yes, I do. You see it on the wood? Yes. Okay. So if someone were dripping blood in that fashion, it would be consistent, would it not, that they might drip blood on these shoes? It's possible. Sure. Now, the maroon pillow that has been marked for identification for record purposes as Defendant's Exhibit 53. Let me show that exhibit to you and ask you whether or not you had had that in your possession at some time. I have seen the pillow, yes. Did you do a test on this pillow? No, I personally did not. Well, let me rephrase that. I did not cut out the stains on the pillow. Okay. Did you do the testing on the stains? Initially, I started testing on the stains, but I did not finish it. All right, but somebody did test them? Yes, that's correct. Okay. Mr. Mulder then says, we will offer into evidence what has been marked for identification purposes as defendant's exhibit number 53. There's no objection. It's admitted into the court. And then he continues to question. It was also marked as state's exhibit number 92. Mr. Greg Davis then says, that is a label that I put on, and you can remove that if you would like. Are you labeling another one as 53A? Mr. Mulder then says, 53A, right. Mr. Greg Davis says, yeah, I've got no objection to that either. The court says, all right, defendant's exhibit 53A is admitted. The questioning then continues. The rug that you were telling us about that you analyzed, do you know where that was? Yes. Okay. Where was that? It's reflected in the bottom picture there under the sink. Is that the court then says, when you turn them that way, they break. Kindly stop. That's the second one that's happened to. Mr. Mulder then says, well, this is the first one for me, Judge. And the court says, all right. Mr. Mulder says, I beg the court's pardon. The court says, thank you. Mr. Mulder says, would you be so kind to assist me, Mr. Mosty? We will pick this up together. Mr. Mosty then says, yes. The court says, all right, be careful. All right. Mr. Mulder says, are you saying that it is this flowered rug right here? That's correct. Okay. And that is the rug that I am holding up. If I could look at the markings, please. Sure. You want to look at the paper sack that it was in? Yes. Our number. Does that help? Yes, that's correct. This is the rug? Yes, it is. And again, you just sampled the portions that are indicated in the rug, the defects there? Yes. You can see there's more blood there. I personally didn't cut those out. Those are the areas that were tested. Yes, I understand. But there is a considerable blood shown here that has not been tested. There is. Okay. Now, there was another rug similar back here, correct? Yes. This is the rug that you tested? Yes. Have you tested this rug? I have no knowledge of that rug, but no, I have not. Okay. There was another rug right here. Have you tested that rug? No, I have not. Okay. Just weren't asked to, I guess. That's correct. Okay. I think that is it. When evidence is gathered, you recommend that it be separated as it's gathered. I mean, if you gather one bloody thing here and another bloody thing someplace else, yes, that's correct. Okay. And why is that? To maintain the integrity of the evidence on that item. Is that so that it doesn't, if you put two bloody items together, if they are wet, they can bleed one into the other, can't they? If there is a lot of soaked through blood, yes, that can happen. Well, there really doesn't have to be a great deal of soaked through blood, does there? Well, any more than if you took blood on two pieces of paper and put it together and it would immediately combine and mix, wouldn't it? I mean, we know that from common knowledge, don't we? There has to be enough to mix, yes. Sure, just like we know from common knowledge that if we, for example, if things are water dilutes, doesn't it? Yes. Okay. And if we were to wet down some towels with blood, the water would have a diluting effect to the blood, would it not? Yes. Okay. Now, if we wanted to find out the pubic hair that was submitted to GeneScreen and where that was recovered from the den of the Routier residents, who would we talk to? I don't have any knowledge of that. I don't know. Okay. I mean, who would it be in your facility who would have access to that sort of information? Normally, hair analyses would come in through trace evidence. Okay. That would be Dr. Irving Stone is the head of trace evidence, is he not? Yes, that's correct. And Mr. Lynch works for Dr. Stone, doesn't he? That's correct. Did you, in your DNA analysis, you can do hair, can't you? If there is a root or tissue adhered to the hair, yes, we are able to get a type on hair. If there is a root or tissue to it, yes, okay. And did you have a facial hair submitted to you? No, you did not? No. You all have had DNA capability there at Swift's for 10 years? Since 1991. Okay. All right. You can analyze saliva, can't you? Well, if the analysis is actually on some cells in the saliva. Right. But saliva has cells, doesn't it? Oftentimes, yes. Just like you can do, what do you do? You do the white blood cells from a blood sample? Yes. Yes, the DNA is in the nucleated cells, which is normally the white blood cells. Traditionally, the red ones don't have. Mature red cells are non-nucleated, that's correct. But at any rate, it doesn't take a great deal of saliva to give you a reaction, does it? Matter of fact, you do cigarette filters, don't you? We do the cigarette filters, and it's from the cells that are on those filters. Normally, that would be transferred from the mouth. Okay. But I mean, ordinarily, you don't soak down. I don't know whether you smoke or not, or if you smoked filter cigarettes, but ordinarily, you don't get that part of the tobacco that wet. But it's so sensitive that it can pick that up, can't it? The DNA? I'm not quite sure what you are asking, but yes, we can get DNA off of cigarette filters. They don't have to be soaked with saliva either. Do they? Again, it's not the saliva we are looking at, it's the cellular transfer that occurs on that filter. I understand. The cells are transferred in the saliva, are they not? Well, not necessarily. It may be from the lips themselves. Okay, all right. Well, I guess they could be blown through from the cells inside the mouth. Right. That we slough all the time, don't we? That's correct. Okay. Mr. Mulder then says, I think that's all. Thank you, Ms. Van Winkle. And then the redirect examination is begun by Mr. Greg Davis. Ms. Van Winkle, I just have one question about the sample retrieved near where the knife had been. Did you receive an item number 33F in a film canister labeled kitchen bar? Yes, I did. That was near that area. Okay. I'm not sure if that's the same location or not. You were not there, so you don't know where the knife was. Is that right? That's correct. 33F, would that be where I am holding my finger there? It is. Okay. Mr. Mulder then says, could I see that? Mr. Greg Davis says, yeah. And Mr. Davis then asks the witness, and that one is one of them that indicated back to Darley Routier, right? It did. All right. Mr. Davis says no further questions. Mr. Mulder says, I think that's all. The court then says, thank you, ma'am. You may be excused. Your next witness, please. Okay, so what did we learn from Carolyn? Well, we learn what Carolyn does at Swift's and how she goes about testing DNA. Then she tells us that she received blood samples from both of the boys from the medical examiner, and that Darren and Darley both had their blood drawn by her out at Swift's. On the window screen, Carolyn didn't detect any human blood. None was found on the window itself. And then they go into, you know, where was Darley's DNA found in throughout all of these items that Carolyn had received? Well, we find out that there was some on a green and plaid washcloth, on a white washcloth. The prosecution then asks Carolyn about two green and white plaid dish towels, and she said that she was not able to get a result from that. So I'm not, you know, quite sure where that falls. On the comforter that was on one of the children's beds, that had Devin's DNA on it, but we were already aware of this from an earlier testimony. The green blanket had DNA that was consistent with Damon. The blue blanket had DNA consistent with Darley. On Damon's jeans, the right leg, back, and front were consistent with both Darley and Damon. And Damon's t-shirt, again, Damon and Darley's DNA. The black baseball cap was consistent with Darley. And remember, this was lying on the floor in the laundry room. Darley's DNA was also on the vacuum, on a rug near the sink, on Devin's pillow, and on one side of the pillowcase, on the handle of the knife, on the tip of the knife, further down on the knife, and I heard somewhere along the way on the handle, so I'm not sure if she meant like another area on the handle or what. Devin's shorts had his DNA on them. Devin's pillow and pillowcase, Devin's DNA, and Darley's DNA. And the black and white blanket that Devin was using had his DNA. Damon's DNA was also found on the tip of the knife that was the weapon. On the sock, there was one stain that was consistent with Damon and Devin, so together, and then an additional stain that was Devin only. Now, all of these areas where Darley's blood was located indicate exactly where she was. Over near the kids, while she was bleeding, in the laundry room by the baseball cap, while she was bleeding, near the sink where water washed away some blood, indicating that the water was run, likely to dampen a washcloth or rag, and again, while she was bleeding. So before we go any further, because at this point in the trial transcripts, at least, there was the objection about, you know, these items, especially the t-shirt being admitted as evidence. And this has been kind of an ongoing objection throughout all of the trial testimony. And part of it is because of this man by the name of Eric Zimmerman. So as I go back and I look at my information, I believe it's episode 63, and this is where you can hear about what exactly happened regarding Zimmerman. But essentially what happened, I'll give you just kind of a real short portion of it. Darley was taken to the hospital, and Larry Byford's partner, Eric Zimmerman, who evidently had police training, gathered the evidence there at the hospital, including Darlie's t-shirt and the children's clothing. So the reason there's a bit of controversy is that, you know, Zimmerman, he's not officially a police officer, at least as far as we know, but he handled this evidence. And even way back then, Darlie's defense team asked for the t-shirt to not be admitted because they couldn't prove the chain of custody for the t-shirt. And of course, even back then, the court denied it and the t-shirt was still admitted. And there's lots of questions around this. You know, was he asked to do this? Did he just grab Darlie's t-shirt and then visit the other room where Damon would have been and then grabbed his clothes? What did he do with the clothes? So during this particular episode, this episode number 63, where Zimmerman is mentioned, Mr. Mosty of the defense team asks Larry Byford if Larry had gathered up the t-shirt and such. And he said that no, it was Eric Zimmerman, his partner, who, as I've already mentioned, had gone through police school and gathered up the t-shirt as well as the kids' clothing. So in this episode, episode number 63, I went and looked through all of the different trial testimonies and discovered that nowhere is Eric Zimmerman listed on, you know, to testify at trial. He isn't listed as a witness. He isn't listed in post-trial, and he doesn't even have an affidavit. So even though here's a person who handled crucial evidence, he's nowhere to be seen. Nobody knows where this guy is. But I did some further research way back when, and I did find out that Eric Zimmerman, he was in fact spoken to by Darlie's defense attorney, and that he did provide a deposition, which could be later in court. So you might think, well, why aren't they bringing this up? Well, it's because the deposition was taken in the summer of 1996. So around June, July, August. And at that point in time, Darlie's defense attorney was different. It was Mr. Douglas Parks. Her attorneys, if you remember, the ones that she has now, were changed in late October of 1996. Now, I know I've mentioned this multiple times, and I'm no lawyer, but what I have researched is that even if attorneys are changed, the deposition can still be used. They don't have to use it, but it's still there for them to use. So, I don't know. Maybe this will come up later on. We'll just have to see. So anyway, again, if you want to hear that, that is episode number 63 of the trial. So let's go back to talking a little bit about Carolyn and what happened in this particular episode. And remember, this whole objection about the t-shirt, and this has to be the third or fourth time. I don't know. I haven't counted them, but it seems like nearly every time this t-shirt is brought up that the defense objects and the judge always says overruled. So when Carolyn is talking about the sink area in the kitchen, she does say that Darlie's blood was there, which is kind of a no-brainer, right? We know that she went to the sink, but then she says that there was a faint blood type that could have been either Damon or Devin. Now, up to this point, she's worded things using the term consistent. Here, she's just guessing. Now, for a scientist having to do this on the stand, might have felt pretty crappy, but, you know, who knows? She's testified in cases before, and from what I gather from the prosecution, this is familiar territory for her. And we'll kind of get into a little bit of that in just a second. Greg Davis then goes over the exhibit number 122. And that's the one where it's kind of a layout of the house. It has all the different colored patterns on it, or colored dots. And this is where everyone was. It is so obvious that Greg Davis is doing whatever he can to program the jury to think only of the name Darlie. So if you remember at the very beginning, when he begins his questioning, he's like, and hey, whose blood was that? And well, it was consistent with Darley. And how about this? Well, it was consistent with Darley. And in case you're wondering, because I did, in case you were wondering, in this particular testimony, when the prosecution is questioning Carolyn Van Winkle, the name Darley comes up 51 times. 51 times in 19 pages of testimony. What we know is that Darley was the one who was able to move around the most. And so it's obvious that she is all over the place in that family room. She was first to follow whomever the person was who fled from the family room, then back to the family room, to the boys, the gathering of the towels, the kitchen, the front doorway, after the paramedics got there. So let's talk about the defense. Carolyn is asked if she tested this pubic hair that was found at the scene, and she did not. But evidently, it did come through Swift's first. And they then sent it off to GeneScreen. The very first time this pubic hair is mentioned is in Judith Floyd's testimony, who we just heard from in the previous episode, who works for GeneScreen. And Judith said that there was no result, but there were ways to do further tests on this pubic hair, which they did not do. Now, if it came through Swift's first, where Lynch is the hair analyst guy, why didn't he test it? We know from Judith Floyd's testimony that the hair contained a root and that, at least according to her, even then it may only give a 60% result. But according to Judith, she said that there were zero results. But I'm still confused as to why, if it came through first at Swift's and Lynch had it in his possession and he's the hair guy, why didn't he test it? Maybe he did, but it was definitely not mentioned. Now, Mulder then asked Carolyn about the knife and the testing of the blood that she did on the knife. It was interesting to hear that there was actually more blood on the knife, if I heard that right. But she tested, quote, limited samples of blood on the knife and evidently not all of it. And I wonder why not? Mulder then asked Carolyn how many washcloths, dish towels, rags, etc. came into Swift's. And she said she didn't count them. He then asked her to do so. And then the court interjects and says, quote, Mr. Mulder, I think Miss Van Winkle. And then at this point, Mulder just continues with his questioning, asking Carolyn how many towels she counted up. So I was wondering, why is the judge interjecting into the defense's questioning? So from what I found, a judge will do this if they need to provide guidance on if Carolyn could, for instance, access her notes, but evidently she's been doing this all along. He might do this if he feels the questioning is becoming too aggressive, or he might do this to keep the proceedings focused. I thought it was strange, but evidently there are reasons for it. Whether or not these reasons were relevant to Mulder's questions, I don't know, because the judge never ends up finishing his question. We do find out that she did have 21 towels in her possession, but only tested the ones that they've spoken about in this testimony. There also seems to be a lot of tension between Mulder and the judge. After this towel questioning, and after she answered the question about, hey, there were 21 of them, the court then asks Mulder to stand up. So evidently, he's been sitting while he's questioning her. But from what I gather, he's referencing these items that they're talking about, and if he stands, he has to bend over to access them. Mulder does say he could get someone else to do it, and the judge kind of says something like, well, fine. And then Mulder says he just wants to make the judge happy. The judge says that, nope, he wants him to stand, which I might point out is not something that he's been doing through this entire questioning of Carolyn, but seems to have ticked off the judge when he began to ask this question of Carolyn about the towels, and Mulder just continued with his questioning. He then asks if someone will help him and makes a snide remark to this other person that he asked and said, you know, don't bend down when you get them, obviously referencing the judge. So things get a little tense, and I get it. You know, every time Mulder objects to something, he's shot down, and it's got to be frustrating. Yet you have to make the judge happy. You know, this back and forth, though, doesn't really seem to be helping his client's case, you know, when this constantly happens, but the judge isn't the final say. The jury is, right? But they're also watching this whole exchange. Carolyn is asked if she tested blood on the counter, and to her knowledge, she did not test the blood where the knife was sitting. During recross, however, Greg Davis has Carolyn talk about an item that she had received that was blood from the area, which I believe was around the knife. Now, the reason I'm unsure about this is because in the transcript, all he says is, quote, I'm pointing at, and it doesn't say what he is pointing at. She is asked why she didn't test all of the white towels that came to her, and she said it wasn't requested. We then find out that the requests for her testing come from various places, like the DA's office, the police, etc. So in essence, they pick and choose what to give her for testing. This is what I gather from this. You know, would something else have been found if the towels had been tested? All of them? We also learned that the facial hair found at the scene was also not tested. And that's where it kind of ended up. That's all of the testimony for Carolyn Van Winkle. The next witness on the stand is going to be Tom Bevel, a bloodstain pattern analyst. He is sometimes referred to as an alleged bloodstain pattern analyst, and I suppose we'll find out why later on. I'm not quite sure, but that's how his name has been mentioned. So his testimony actually runs for an incredibly long time. So like others we've covered who have been on the stand for a while, this is going to run several episodes. Thank you all so much for listening. If you haven't yet, please subscribe to the Beach House 34 YouTube channel so that you don't miss any episodes. It is the absolute best way to stay updated. You can leave your comments there too, as I tend to go there the most often to read and respond to the comments. The link for YouTube will be in the show notes, along with any information that you'll find helpful, especially regarding today's episode. So with that said, we'll talk soon. Bye for now.